Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, January 13th, and it is 1:30 p.m. This is Talk on the Rock, and I'm your host, Colette Zarnicki. A couple of our Wrangell residents spoke on Valerie and Valise, which is a travel blog, and also where I saw them was on the YouTube channel for Valerie and Valise. So today we have the host of Valerie and Valise, who is Valerie Stickmack Bailey, to talk about her experience as a travel writer. You can call in to ask a question. The number to KSDK is 874-2345. Hi, Valerie. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thank you. I was getting a little tongue-tied here.
That's okay. That is my maiden name, and it has always been a tongue twister.
Awesome. So you mentioned in your blog that you grew up in Alaska. Where exactly did you grow up, and where do you live now?
Yeah, so I grew up in Eagle River, which, if you're not familiar with South Central, it's just outside of Anchorage. Technically, it is part of Anchorage. And now I live in Cleveland, Ohio, which is a long ways away.
Definitely. I actually went the opposite route. I'm from Michigan originally, and of course live in Wrangell right now. So
I love it.
Yeah, we cross paths. So you started Valerie and Valise in 2013. And that's about 13 years ago. I understand it began as a personal project that you would share with those close to you, but it since has grown. What inspired you to start the travel blog?
Yeah, so my mom actually inspired me. I am a highly overqualified, overeducated travel writer with no qualifications in travel writing by degree. But I had been writing on the internet for a long time when I was growing up. And so I went to school and I got degrees in, you know, quote, useful areas of study and ended up with an MBA in the end. And I was sitting at home after graduating with my MBA, waiting to figure out what my next job would be. My mom asked me, if you could do anything, what would you be doing? And I said, I'd be writing and editing and doing marketing for a travel magazine. And she said, well, why don't you just make your own website, and then you can show people when you're in interviews, you can show them that you know what you're doing. And so that was how I started Valerie and Valise. And it was actually called Valise Magazine originally. It was meant to be much more like a traditional travel magazine, but over time it morphed into something that was much more personal stories and experiences. And I eventually changed the name so that it would make a little bit more sense to everyone. And here we are. And it's wild to hear you say 13 years, because it doesn't feel that long, but I guess my gray hair would attest that it is.
I completely understand. Time goes by so, like, the blink of an eye, really. And also, valise means a travel, like, suitcase or a travel bag, mm-hmm. Correct?
Yes. Whenever I meet anybody who can speak French, they understand immediately. Valise was actually a word that was commonly used in English around the turn of the 20th century, the first few decades of the 1910s, 1920s, but it fell out of popularity. So French speakers get it immediately because it literally just means suitcase. And then it's sort of a throwback to a very specific type of bag that travelers used to use, 100 years ago.
Really cool. As I mentioned in the intro, you interviewed J.R. Meek and my coworker. I don't know if you know she's my coworker, but Jillian Privet, to talk about Wrangell. And you mentioned you've been to Wrangell 3 times, I believe. And you have earlier entries on Wrangell on your blog as well. Is there anything that stuck out to you in your last interview with JR and Jillian since you last wrote about Wrangell?
Yes, and I think I commented on it in the video, which is that my last trip to Wrangell, like many people who visit, I was on a cruise ship. I was on a smaller ship. And that's actually how I visited each time. I've been very fortunate that every time I've been on a small ship or a mid-sized ship, I've gotten to make port in Wrangell. But what's changed since early 2022 to now is a lot of focus and encouragement of sharing Native culture. which is really exciting. So I remember it would have been sort of mid-pandemic. I remember visiting, and there really wasn't a lot of activity. There were very few totems. Even the local community totem park, everything was kind of, it looked a little bit like it was not the epicenter of activity that their photos showed me, that there are now community activities and there's new carving. And that's just really exciting because I work very hard to try and highlight and amplify Native stories, Native voices through my platform. And so the fact that Wrangell is embracing that and fostering that is very exciting and something that I really want to see personally on my next visit.
Yeah, and when was the last time you were here in Wrangell, and when do you think you'll come back?
So I was last in Wrangell in June of 2022. And to be fair, the break in between now and then, I did have a baby and she's now almost two. So it's been a little bit of a journey for a good reason that I haven't been back to Wrangell. And I'm hoping that I can actually make it out there early this coming summer. I'm currently chatting with a few other destinations in Southeast about making a trip. And I thought I might do a milk run and stop off in Wrangell for a day or two to see what's new and enjoy some great food and stroll around town, because it feels like it's been way too long already.
Yeah. And I'm curious, with each place you travel to, is this each place you write about as well? So, like, perhaps this milk run that hopefully you'll take, you'll write about the whole experience.
Yes. So the goal whenever I'm traveling, mostly in Alaska, but generally anywhere, I'll share my stories because people find that once they've read one of my resources, they like to know where else I've been. I like to do both pieces and the whole. So I would make sure that all of my Wrangell articles are updated, the ones that I've already published. I would write any new articles about Wrangell specifically or anywhere else that I might visit on the milk run. And then I would also do at least one article that covers the whole trip and how I put it together and how each day went. Because while most people, when they go search for something on the internet, they want, facts and information, there is a segment of people who really enjoy reading the old style of literal blogging. So this is some internet history. It was called weblogging, and it was telling your story on the internet. And many travel writers have moved away from that really intense personal storytelling, but I find it very enjoyable to write. And I think people enjoy reading, how did Valerie actually put it together? And whoa, those are some strange flight times and all the things you don't see on the curated social media feeds and on people's blog posts about the actual, facts and figures of visiting somewhere. So there'll definitely be at least one article like that if I make the milk run too.
Awesome, cool. So, what Alaska destinations can you not get enough of, and why?
That's really tough, actually. I have visited a lot of Alaska. I think I have, on average, visited more of Alaska than many Alaskans because I don't judge that at all. A lot of times Alaskans want to leave Alaska. They want to go see their family down south, or they want to go to Hawaii or somewhere warm. Whereas when I'm going on a trip, I'm going to Alaska. So I go all kinds of places that many people haven't been. I love Sitka. Sitka is one of my favorite communities. I love Denali National Park. It's been several years since I've been to Denali, and I really would love to get back, especially with the road reopening next summer. And then I think I'm long overdue for a couple visits to Fairbanks because it's been a couple years again since I've been there, and I know that everyone has a lot of new stuff going on all across the state, which is always exciting. But I'm headed back to Fairbanks at least in March, so I'll at least tick one of those off in the coming year.
Yeah, and I also read in your blog, one of your recommendations is just having one or two destinations of the area on on somebody's travel list. So, of course, those places are all, far apart, and that you won't be doing that all at once.
Yeah, that's one of the things when I chat with people about planning their trips, because I do consultation calls. A lot of times they're feeling very overwhelmed, and that's often either because they haven't done quite enough research to get a sense of what they exactly want to experience and where to experience things in Alaska, since it does vary a lot by region and by community, or they're just packing too much in. And I try and be really conscious of that myself when I visit Alaska to sort of lead by example of not moving from hotel to hotel to hotel every night, because then you're just seeing Alaska by road or by train or by boat. You're not actually seeing the communities and the people and the cultures that are all available across the state.
Yeah, definitely. And when you're traveling, how do you decide what's worth turning into a story?
That is a great question. So there are two kinds of stories on my blog. There are general travel information. That's the majority of what I write, which is like where to stay, where to eat, things to do, what time of year to visit, whatever. Those are general things that people need to know. And then there are what I call rabbit holes, which are where I discover something that I can't get out of my own head, that's just an interesting story or something that just kind of like sticks in my own brain. And that's usually the only criteria I have, is that it's something that's really interesting to me and that I want to share. So some examples of that were digging into the history of why there is no Grand Hotel in Denali National Park. I did a story debunking one of the reality shows about Alaska that you can watch on Netflix. And I went so far as to buy this old magazine on eBay and like read the original source material. And it's things like that where I find something usually historical that's really interesting to me that I can't find anywhere else. And I say, okay, that's part of what I do, is I find the story and I write the story. And those don't tend to get as much traffic to my site, but people who read them find them interesting because a lot of people who visit Alaska are curious and adventurous and want to know those same stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. So, in your blog, as I mentioned before, you include recommendations on how to plan travel, and one example is what to pack for all kinds of travel, including for people who only like to bring on carry-ons like myself. What has the feedback been on those recommendations?
It's a really interesting thing that people struggle with. I think there are different philosophies of packing. Like you said, I too am a preferred carry-on only person, though increasingly I'm carrying camera gear and winter gear and other things that require me to check a bag. Most people, I like to assume most people are pretty common sense, and I tell them, you're not going to another planet. You're going to a part of the US. Maybe the weather's different than it is when you're at home, and you might need some special gear, but you really don't need any special clothing. You don't necessarily need different shoes. You probably need waterproof shoes. That's sort of a given that I think every Alaskan would recommend. And so, usually what I try to help people is to remember the special things they might not realize that they need. A great example of that is sunglasses or an eye mask or both, because if you're visiting Alaska in the summer, it's not going to get dark at night, as we all know, and your hotel room curtains might not be as thick as you would like. And so those are the little things, or like when you go outside and it's bright because the sun is, at a particular angle in the winter, having sunglasses can be a really important little thing to pack that you might forget. So most people, I think, are just happy that someone's sort of gone beyond the surface and said, here, here's the extra stuff from having visited so many times and growing up there, that I do know you'll want these too. Make some room in your bag for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you engage with local voices when telling stories about a place?
So ideally, I am working with a local host and they were kind of chatting about what stories I might be telling. So if I'm going somewhere totally new, a lot of what I'm going to write is just the general information, because it's something I don't already have on my blog. If I'm returning to a destination, I am looking for those really interesting and unique stories. And I would either work with like someone like JR or someone on the team from Travel Wrangle to get more information or connect with a local guide. And then I would dive really deep into the story that I think I want to tell with them, while remaining open to the fact that I probably will find at least one other story I'm interested in as well. That is, I think, an important piece of pre-research that I get to do because of the way I'm traveling in Alaska and being a travel writer, that I don't necessarily think or really think is appropriate for most people just visiting. You guys, you want a local guide and there's lots of interesting information, but I've been to so many places, I'm looking to go even deeper into the stories I find. And so having a local who's an expert on a topic really helps me find the voice or the next source that I need to tell the story.
Thank you. And so not only do you have Alaska in your blog, but it also includes other US states and travel destinations like Harry Potter Amusement Park in Orlando. I also read on your blog that, along with Alaska being one of your favorite destinations, other favorites of yours is London and Jordan. Will you talk a little bit about those places and what makes them your favorite?
Yeah, they couldn't get more different from one another, right? There's Alaska and all the beautiful, rugged majesty. There's lots of precipitation. There's Jordan, which is beautiful and natural wonders of its own, but it's a desert. It's a very dry, arid climate. And then those two destinations are generally more outdoors and cultural experiences. And then London is the third piece, which is my metropolitan destination of choice. I think what I like about London, if I had to sum it up, is that it's a city where you could stay in the city and experience the whole world. There are museums on every topic. There's food from every cuisine in the world. There's this deep, long history, which does have problematic chapters, but sort of opens you up to the world and all the cultures there in it. And so I think when I say I love London, I feel like if you said, Valerie, you can move somewhere and never leave that place, I would probably choose London because I could still feel like I could travel the world even living in one very large city like London. And Jordan, I love because I think it challenges traveler expectations a lot like Alaska does, where people kind of think they get it or they think they know what they're going to get. And then they get there and they realize it's very different. Jordan is incredibly safe and hospitable and a beautiful country with a really interesting culture and great food. All the pieces of the puzzle that I love in every destination that I visit. And I've been to Jordan twice and really would go back in a heartbeat if you handed me a ticket. It just is something really special. And I particularly love that it challenges how people think about that region, that it can be a safe and wonderful and enjoyable place to visit. And I want everyone to go there and have that experience so that they view the whole world a little bit more with an open mind.
This is very inspiring. Thank you. And it's also interesting how you said London, the whole world is pretty much in London. Do you feel that way about New York City at all?
I think yes, like theoretically I agree with the premise, and I think every New Yorker would be offended if I said no. I probably feel about New York the way I feel about Paris and some of the other big cities of the world, and that they too are very multicultural, but there's something special in London for me. And part of it is the history. So we were talking about history. I am definitely a big history nerd, and so lots of chapters of London history are of particular interest to me, and that sort of hooked me when I was first visiting. More than a decade ago when I first started visiting London. New York is wonderful, but it's not my, I call it my soul city. London is my soul city, so it's
Yeah.
just not the one for me.
I haven't been to London yet and I plan on going. So, yeah. Is there a post, one of your posts that resonated far more than you expected with someone else?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I feel like that's like a good pop quiz that I need to think about for a second. Because I feel like, of course, any of my articles that are really helpful, informative, those resonate in their own way. But for things that really make people talk or are interesting to them, there's a couple. One that I think is worth calling out, I did an article. It looks like I did it earlier in 2025 is when I first published it. And that was an article about mountain peaks and their native names. And it covers Alaska, but it also covers down the West Coast. And my goal with writing that was to be really overt in reminding people that this is all native land and that these mountains have names that have deep meanings. I say deep, like long-standing, because sometimes the definition of the native name is just a description, but that doesn't, diminish the value of that name. Another story, and I'll say this one is kind of an interesting one. It's sort of fresh in my mind, is I was in Kotzebue last summer and I noticed that they have jade boulders all over town. And so I did some research and talked to some locals and tried to figure out what was going on, why there were these giant, beautiful jade boulders everywhere. They're everywhere if you look for them when you're walking around Kotzebue. And I recently shared that story and I got some really good feedback from locals about the way I was sort of framing the jade and the value it has. And so I think that sometimes the resonance that people give back, it isn't always positive, and that's okay. And that's good feedback for me as a writer to be very aware of the framework that I bring to my story and how I might want to adjust different lenses in front of the camera of my mind when I'm telling to make sure that I honor different perspectives and tell the story in a way that is respectful and interesting at the same time.
Yeah. Awesome. And I don't know. Did you write, is London and Jordan on your travel blog? I couldn't find it.
Yes, they are not. So I actually have other sites, other travel blogs, one dedicated to London and one dedicated to Jordan, because I think what we found as digital writers on the internet is that people want to really understand the website when they arrive very clearly. So when you hit Valerie and Belize, right at the top of the menu, it says Alaska, and then it says other destinations. So it's very clear that I focus on Alaska. And more than 50% of the articles I publish right now are all about Alaska. So everything kind of makes, you're like, okay, this girl knows Alaska. When you hit my London site, it's all about London. So that is exactly what you'll find when you're there. Same with Jordan. And I think that helps. It maybe doesn't allow people to as easily travel digitally between those sites. But most people who want Alaska for me, that's what they get. And then they might find another site, or they might find my London site if they were going there, but they're not all on one website anymore.
Okay. What are the other sites called for?
Sure. Yeah. So the London site is called London On My Mind. And I think if you type that in, I'm not sure what you'll find, because it's probably going to bring up something random, but it's spelled londonmymind.com. So it's kind of a play on the letters. And then the Jordan site is the easiest one. It's called jordantraveler.com.
Okay, great. What other countries do you have?
So I don't have any other country websites right now, I don't think. Hang on, I had way too many websites at one point. I do have topical websites, which I think are a really fun, different way of slicing travel content. So for example, I have a website that I love working on. It's called Eat Like Bourdain. And it's a giant encyclopedia, basically, or like a map of everywhere that Anthony Bourdain ate during his TV shows. Wow. Because often people are traveling to Milan, or they're traveling to Bangkok, or they're traveling to Cartagena in Colombia, and they want to go to somewhere good for eat to eat. And Anthony Bourdain was an excellent guide in his shows for that. And so now there's this website all on that one topic. I have another one called Space Tourism Guide that's all about astronomy. So where you can go stargazing, where you can see the aurora, all of those kinds of topics. And then my new little project is called Global Tiki Tour, which is all about tiki bars around the world.
Oh my goodness. Okay. And did you travel to all these places?
So in the topical sites, generally not as much. Okay. It would be, I wish I had the money to do that. No, they're often research-based. The nice thing is, like with the Bourdain site, me and the team of writers that I hired, we just had to watch the shows to get the information.
Yes.
The space tourism site, I have traveled to a lot of those places, and same with the tiki bars. I generally don't write a bar review unless I've been there. So.
Okay. Awesome. How do you see Valerie and Valais evolving in the next few years?
That is the million-dollar question. And if I knew, I would not be so stressed about it. the world has changed a lot in the last few years. And I'm sure everyone listening is well aware of AI and its pervasiveness in technology and the way we interact on the internet anymore. But it really hit small publishers very, very hard. We were sort of penalized for sounding like AI, even though the AI was trained on us, because we all have these personal experiences we shared. So Valerie and Belize has taken some real punches from the big tech giants that it used to get some traffic from. And that's hard, because if you, not to get too businessy, but if you think about business, you need a top of the funnel where most people find you. And then those people work their way down, reading more articles. Maybe they sign up for my email list. Maybe they book a consultation with me. That's all part of how I make money from this business, because the information on my website is free. If I don't have very many people at the top of that funnel, it gets really hard to stay in business. So I've been focusing on keeping the funnel as wide as I can, which is being more creative and, you know, doing like Pinterest and sharing on Facebook. And I have a big Facebook group that I help moderate. Also doing more social media in general, just sharing the same content that I've shared in a written format over on Instagram or on Facebook, to try and reach people and get them that information where they're now able to actually find and consume it. And then the third piece that I've been working on from a business side is partnering with local businesses to help promote them. So even though my audience is nowhere near the size that it used to be, there's still a very well engaged audience of people interested in Alaska travel. And so I do a lot of different arrangements with companies. The most common one is where basically a local company could offer a discount on something like a tour or an accommodation. And then If someone uses my discount code or my special link, I would get a commission for that, kind of like a travel agent, except it comes with a discount, which is what I love. I love giving that to help people make their Alaska trip more affordable. And that has been a really powerful lever to keep my business viable as something I can focus on full time, even though my audience has shrunk. I mean, I wish I'd thought of this 5 years ago, because then I would not have to worry what happens in the next 5 years. So I think I'll be shifting more toward a smaller audience, but more engaged and more value, providing them more value when I can.
Yeah, and do you feel that same way with your other blogs as well? Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's really hard out here for us little publishers. I mean, you hear about it, of course, with NPR funding, New York Times is suing OpenAI, or all of these things are, they're kind of all related to the way that media is being created and consumed and funded in the United States. And the small publishers don't have that big of a voice, and we don't make headlines, but we're also being impacted too.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. And you, how big is your team? It's a small team, I imagine.
It's me. And then I have a writer editor that I work with who's not based in the US, but she does a lot of kind of like research and copy editing and things, just put a second set of human eyes on my work before I publish.
So two people
Yep.
total.
Yep.
Wow. And it started out as one, of course.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I think the biggest I ever got was four, and then the business changed. So now we're
Yeah.
just two again.
Yeah. And so we're wrapping up here on time, but I do remember reading that you grew up in Alaska and you and your family would travel mostly all in the US, right?
Yes, I had never left the US until I was an adult.
Yeah. Would you all travel like mostly in Alaska, or how did that?
Yeah, I traveled some as a young person with the Girl Scouts. As a scout, there were opportunities to travel to the lower 48, so I did a couple trips like that. Actually, one of the most common places my family visited was the Yukon Territory, which was, I technically, that is international travel. It was just our neighbor, to the east, that didn't require a passport at the time. So we spent a lot of time. I have distinct memories of visiting Kluane Lake and Kluane National Park and Whitehorse, and that did feel like a big adventure. It was different in its own way from everywhere else we visited in Alaska.
Yeah. And so would you say that early remember like memories of traveling, that is pretty much what ins like what the travel bug got how the travel bug got in you?
Yeah, somewhat. It turns out that they have actually identified a gene that maps really well with people who have what we call wanderlust. So there is actually a gene that some people express that makes them want to travel more. And that actually, it makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint, because you do need people to go out and explore and find new resources way back, millennia ago. So I think I probably just also have that gene. But my family always has encouraged me to explore the things that interested me, including travel. And so at one point, my favorite story was when I very first started traveling, and someone said to my mom, who you can tell has encouraged me along the way, how do you let your daughter go do these things, go these places? And my mom said to that person, how do I stop her? She's gonna go. I just have to encourage her and keep her safe. And so that's sort of been the philosophy that has guided me, is explore, do it safely, and enjoy the experience along the way.
That's fascinating. I think I share the same gene as you.
Yep.
Yeah. Is there anything else you would like to say about travel blogging, Valerie Valise, anything?
Nothing related to my business. I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I did a campaign last fall to support public radio in Alaska, and I think it is critically important. And I hope that we can turn around some policy there to support the work that you're doing. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to come talk about what I do.
Wow, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It was very interesting to hear and learn about you and the travel blogs. That was Valerie Stickmack Bailey, who is the founder of Valerie and Valise.